has you ready to go. Our friends at Sunset Lake are running a site-wide sale right now. 25% off site-wide. 25% on all products. When you check out with the code July4. That's the word July and the number 4 with no spaces. For me, some of my biggest uses of CBD to relax. Well, I use the Good Night Oil every night to get to sleep. But on the weekends, maybe after a big meal, I'll have one of the pre-rolls. I know others, Matt, will use some of the key for their bud to mix it in with other things that help you relax.
It's a great product.
But they also have relaxed gummies. They have focus gummies too, but that Brian's still recovering from how much focus he had. But they have all sorts of products. They got gummies, gummies with THC. They got Delta 9. They have CBD fudge, CBD coffee. You want to have that caffeine, but you don't want to get too racy? CBD coffee. Plus, you can relax more easily knowing our friends at Sunset Lake help support causes that we care about too. Carceral reform, independent media outlets. They have provided, obviously, big supporters of this program. They've provided thousands of dollars to strike funds, direct aid for impoverished families, on and on and on. They're a great company. They've got a great product. Don't let this summer pass you by. De-stress and decompress when you head to sunsetlakesabade.com and use the coupon code July4, one word, well, one word and one number, no spaces, July 4 to save 25% site-wide. Sale ends July 7th at midnight Eastern time. Get on it. You want to try out these products, see their site for additional terms and conditions. And now, time for the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome them.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, July 1st, 2025. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, reconciliation bill inching toward final vote in the Senate. David Dayen, the American prospect, will be here to give us the latest. Meanwhile, this Republican bill, regardless of what changes bring about over the next few minutes, represents the largest cuts to the safety net in decades. This bill also eliminates tax incentives for a whole host of sustainable energy programs. But late breaking, the excise tax that it actually added to wind and solar was just voted out in an amendment moments ago. And while Musk and Trump, they're at it again, let them fight. British Lancet Journal says USAID cuts may cause over 14 million deaths over the next 5 years. 14 million additional deaths. Israel strikes a cafe in Gaza. In addition to 4 schools and 2 hospitals, that cafe, known to serve journalists because it's one of the last places in Gaza with reliable internet service. Last night, Israel killed over 80 people. Meanwhile, international charities and NGOs call for an end to the Israeli-U.S. backed aid site because Israel has been using it as a killing field. Meanwhile, Russia now paying young Ukrainians to be unwitting suicide bombers. California law passed exempts certain housing projects from CEQ, the environmental major environmental bill, I should say, law in California. Duke loses NIH grants because they use the prefix trans in reference to things like disease transmission and transnational studies. Lastly, new report, flu shot during pregnancy associated with a 44% reduction in flu for babies under the 6 months old. All this and more on today's Majority Report. And I'm also just being told that today is Canada's birthday. So happy birthday, Canada. Perhaps in the fun half, we'll give you a shofar if you call in. We'll see. Things are moving very, very quickly right now in the Senate, or I should say are happening as we speak. As of this morning and working through the night on this record-breaking voterama, they had over something like 42 votes. The Senate Republicans have just, I'm sorry, literally 3 minutes ago passed their reconciliation mega bill. David Dayen will be on in a moment or two to give us a sense of what's in it. I mean, they were writing this thing up until the last minute, and it will then head to the House where they will have to pass this version or perhaps huddle and work out some type of compromise. In the House, reports were as late as last night, House Republicans were basically saying, how did they manage to make this bill even effing worse? And there's a bunch of Republican so-called moderates who will almost guaranteed lose their seat if they pass this bill as is. And we'll see whether or not they will actually vote for it. But just to give you a sense of how it's going to devastate, we're talking in the last version of this bill, almost $1 trillion cut out of Medicaid. Upwards to 11 million, almost 12 million people over the course of the next 5 years could lose their health insurance. We're talking tens of thousands, if not over 100,000 people will lose their lives. Millions of people will be kicked off of SNAP. It goes on and on. This pays for a huge hiring boost to ICE to build the wall at Mexico, to build detention centers for immigrants. It increases the defense budget by something like $100 billion. Here is Andy Beshear, Kentucky governor, on with Jen Psaki on MSNBC last night, talking about this, what it's going to mean for rural America.
Well, first, you are entirely right that this would be absolutely devastating to Kentucky, but it's going to be devastating to all of rural America. You mentioned that it is basically going to fire, because that's what Donald Trump and everybody who votes for this is doing. They are firing health care workers across the country, 20,000 in my state. 200,000 people in Kentucky and millions more aren't going to be able to get the treatments they need. They might not survive. And those 35 rural hospitals that are at risk of closing, Jen, each and every one of them is the second largest employer in the community that they're in. So just imagine you're a small business in that community and the second largest employer goes under. All the jobs evaporate. What happens? Your entire community's economy takes a major hit, and all of a sudden you as a small business may be laying some people off as well. But then take the families and how they're going to be impacted. Whether you're on Medicaid or on private insurance, if your rural hospital closes, you got to drive a couple hours just to see the doctor you used to see in your own community. If your parents get kicked off of their coverage and they're in long-term care costs, you got to bring them into your home and try to figure out how to keep them alive. Half of Kentucky's kids are covered under Medicaid. They lose their coverage and you are scrambling over that next prescription. This is going to impact the life of every single American negatively. It is going to hammer our economy, and it is wrong and it is mean. And I cannot believe that people refuse to do their job and represent their people that they were sent to Washington to represent and instead are just pledging fealty towards someone pushing such a damaging piece of legislation.
Hard to add to that. The CBO predicts, and again, this was the scoring that took place last week, but certainly the bill has not gotten any better. 11.8 million more Americans would become uninsured by early 2030s. 3 million more would not qualify for food stamps. And this is to say nothing of the tax cuts for billionaires and millionaires and the tax increases for people who are living in poverty. I mean, it's astonishing. The highest tax cuts, or I should say as a percentage of the existing tax cuts, happen in the more or less $150,000 and up. Folks in between will be getting a reduction in taxes, but you'll be paying for it in insurance rates when you have so many people having to go to the emergency room. You'll be paying for it in terms of, a whole host of other, you'll be paying for it insofar as energy costs.
Day trip to the hospital.
Medicaid patients may be paying a new $35 copayment. However, you should be buoyed by the fact that there would be 10,000 new immigration and customs enforcement officers who will be getting a $10,000 signing bonus. $350 billion for Trump's border and national security agenda, $46 billion for the wall, $45 billion for 100,000 migrant detention facility beds. There's a tax credit, however, if you produce metallurgical coal. And there are billions for the Artemis moon mission and the exploration of Mars.
Do you see what the Tribune of the Working Class, J.D. Vance, said? The thing that will bankrupt this country... Oh, sorry. He called the stuff about Medicaid trivialities. Minutia, I think, is the specific word. And what we really need to do is get these border provisions money to ICE folks through.
Over 100,000 people will die because of the lack of healthcare. Now, of course, you know, we saw this the first time around in COVID. Whatever. Here is, well, let's take a, in a moment, we're going to be talking to David Dayan about this. Like I say, the bill literally just passed moments ago. First, a word from our sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Liquid IV. Super easy for me to pitch this every day on this program. I drink at least one of these, particularly in the summer. And the best part is, not only does it keep my whistle wet while I do the show, but I actually feel it at the end of the day. Being hydrated is healthy. Doesn't matter how hot your summer gets, Liquid IV can help you be hydrated for the adventures ahead. Summer heat means it's the perfect time to try their new Arctic raspberry flavor. Plus, Liquid IV has sugar-free solutions powered by LIV Hydroscience for smart hydration. Visit liquidiv.com. Use the code MajorityRep, not Majority Report, MajorityRep. At checkout, you will get 20% off your first order. For me, I am all in on the sugar-free versions of Liquid IV. They have like a raspberry lemonade. There's a melon. There's a lemon lime. They're fantastic. And they come in these little packets, super easy to travel with. If you're traveling, great for, flying and keep yourself hydrated. If you're going out and had a fun night the night before, you can find all of their best-selling hydration multipliers of flavors online. And now you can try their newest flavor, Hydration Multiplier Arctic Raspberry. They got more fun flavors too, like cotton candy and popsicle firecracker. Just one stick plus 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. Powered by LIV Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. They have three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. Eight essential vitamins and nutrients, always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Squeeze the most out of your summer with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com. Get 20% off your first order with code MajorityRep at checkout. That's 20% off your first order with the code MajorityRep at liquidiv.com. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to David Dayan. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Emma Vigeland out on her honeymoon.
Yeah.
Classic. Want to welcome back to the program, executive editor of the American Prospect, host of the wrap-up.
The weekly roundup and also the Organized Money podcast.
Oh, right. Exactly. All right. Well, I'll get that straight.
Got a great one out today. Organizedmoney.fm.
The Organized Money podcast is actually is one of my rare listens. I don't listen to many other shows, but I always learn something from both you and Stoller.
We got a great one today on Spotify. It's really good.
Folks should check that out. But in the meantime, the Senate reconciliation bill, no longer called the One Big Beautiful Bill, care of Chuck Schumer. He really showed him.
Good going, Chuck.
You can't call that officially that. Just passed, and the final passage of the bill was released about 15 minutes ago, 900 some odd pages. I wanted David Dayan on because I know by now he's read all 900 and whatnot pages of that bill. David, welcome back to the program.
Fortunately for me, it was only 887.
Oh, so, all right. Well, that's why you got here. That's why you were able to get here so early.
Yeah. I spot checked it. Let's say that.
I think people know the headline story, $1 trillion, it appears, to be cut from Medicaid. Mm-hmm. It is going to possibly cause the deaths of about 110,000 people over the course of the next 5-10 years who would otherwise have health care. It's going to kick up to 12 million people off of Medicaid by 2034, 3 million off of SNAP.
You factor out the deaths, it only kicked 11.9 million people off.
I guess that's true.
People will die, so... You know, don't be so harsh, as J.D. Vance would say. It's only minutia.
Let's not get into the minutia of this stuff. Right. And then, of course, it assaults like the any type of not so small advances we had made to deal with like decarbonizing our economy. It is shocking. At the last minute, apparently, they got rid of the excise tax that would have actually taxed. Things like, but talk about, explain this. I've mentioned it many times on the show, but when we get into like the deficit and the debt, the Senate did something, and I don't understand how they got away with doing it without having to sort of fire the parliamentarian, which was an accounting trick that makes it seem like this is not adding huge trillions of dollars to the debt. Now, I'm not necessarily so concerned about the debt as it is, as I am it completely obfuscating what the reality of this bill is.
Well, the reality is that they couldn't have passed the bill without this trick. So the gimmick is called the current policy baseline. And what that means is that the Trump tax cuts, as you know, expire at the end of this year. And one of the big things in this bill extends those Trump tax cuts and makes them permanent. And that under a current law, because the law is the tax cuts expire. And so starting in 2026, they would pick up again. So under that current law baseline, that would cost almost $3.8 trillion over that 10-year period, right? So what the Senate Republicans said is that, well, actually, that's just current policy. We're just extending what was already the policy of the United States. And so that actually costs $0. And that is the difference in this bill between a bill that will cost, and we don't know about the final stuff, like the killing of the excise tax, and there were some other changes. So we don't know the final number, but at least as of this weekend, the estimate was it cost $3.3 trillion over that decade, the bill that would add that much to the debt. Now, with the current policy baseline, it looks like it saves $500 billion over that 10-year period.
So it's like the functional equivalent of like I make a decision to rent a car for 10 years. And I've been renting that car. I've been paying whatever it is, leasing the car. I've been paying $350 a month. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that 10 years, I say, well, it's not going to cost me anything to keep paying for this because I've been paying for it already, right. Essentially.
Right. I mean, you know, it does offer opportunities to the other side if they ever get back into power for Democrats. I mean, if you conceive of this, and actually Republicans were asked this on the record and they conceded that this would happen. If you passed a bill that said, we are imposing Medicare for all for a year or a week or a day. And then you subsequently pass a bill that says we are just extending Medicare for all to make it permanent. That permanence of Medicare for all would not cost any money.
Right.
So I am ready in the Project 2029 that I'm sure Third Way and Anne Marie Slaughter are putting together for the Medicare for All for One Day Act of 2029, which will then subsequently be followed up by making it permanent and costing no money.
That would be encouraging. But let me ask one more question about the permanence of the tax cuts. When we say permanent, does that just mean that they're not set to sunset? I mean, how do they? Oh, and the way that they can make them permanent is,
as long as they do them for 10 years, they're permanent. I mean, that's kind of under the budget scoring that we have. If you say these tax cuts are now permanent, the way that it's scored, it only looks at the 10-year budget window.
But do they? They don't sunset.
They will not sunset. No.
And they don't have to sunset because theoretically, they don't exist.
But
and
here's the funny thing. There are other taxes in this bill that do sunset. All of Trump's campaign promise taxes, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on interest on auto loans. It's not no tax on Social Security. It's a deduction for people over the age of 65. All of those are 4 years. They're only there for 4 years, right? So they could then use this gimmick again if Republicans are still in power and say, oh, well, current law is no tax on tips, so we'll just extend that and it won't cost any money. So they are simultaneously using a current law baseline to shrink the perceived cost of certain taxes and using a current policy baseline to eliminate the cost of certain taxes in the course of the same bill.
Let's talk about the AI ban.
Let's talk about anything else.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, the AI ban is gone.
That was a good thing.
The ban on the ability to regulate AI is gone.
Just to be clear, it was going to be a 10-year moratorium on regulation of AI at the state level. And the way they were going to do this is they had a pot of money that states wouldn't be able to access unless they agreed to this moratorium. And there was a deal attempted by, you know, some senators on the Republican side who disagreed with this. They shrunk it for a bit, and then that deal blew up. And then there was a vote last night to strip this moratorium from the bill, and it passed 99-1. So big tech lobbyists who were pushing for this very heavily and hard obviously miscalculated severely that they would be able to muscle this through, because literally almost every senator voted against it in the end.
Yeah, that's not very close. So that is gone. What are the other what are the things in the bill, as you can tell right now, that are going to be problems for the House? Now, when this goes to the House, are they going to do a conference, or is the House like sort of just decides
the House
whether they're
going to try? I mean, Mike Johnson, Speaker, is going to try to pass this immediately. In fact, there is a Rules Committee session today, and House members are expected back to Washington tomorrow to start voting on this. And, in a perfect world, Johnson would have this on the president's desk by July 4th. Now, is he going to be able to do that? Well, There are several things that the House Freedom Caucus had said were absolutely not going to pass that are in this Senate bill. The first one is the House isn't going by this current policy baseline gimmick. And so they see red ink in this bill more than what they wanted in the bill. So the House in their budget resolution said we can have no more than $2.5 trillion in tax cuts more than the spending cuts in the bill. If there is if that relationship isn't maintained, you have to reduce the tax cuts. You have to change those in some way so that they aren't as costly. And that is not in here. That violates the budget resolution. And more important, it violates the promise that was made to the House Freedom Caucus that this would happen. And that's about 30 people. The House can only lose, Republicans only lose 3 votes in the House to pass this. So that's one, is that it's too much taxation or not enough spending cuts. The second is on the energy provisions. So you mentioned that there were these changes to the clean energy provisions that made them very, very harsh and would have made it almost impossible to produce a solar or wind project in this country. Because not only were the tax credits phased out very quickly, but there was this new excise tax on solar and wind projects that would have increased the cost of building a solar or wind project to a degree that you couldn't ever pencil it out. Those were taken out at the last minute, at the end of the bill. I think also to get Lisa Murkowski's vote. Lisa Murkowski got a bounty of things, a bunch of gifts, including tax breaks for whaling captains in Alaska and tax breaks for Alaskan fishing villages. This is literally in the bill. Another thing she actually wanted is to weaken the phase out of these tax credits. So the tax on solar and wind is out. As long as you begin construction on a solar or wind project in the next year, you get the tax credit. You have to have that in service by 2027. So there's going to actually, if this bill passes, be a gold rush of solar and wind projects trying to get in under the wire, right, within a year of passage of this enactment of the bill. However, this is exactly the thing that the House Freedom Caucus didn't want. As as a condition of them passing the bill in the House, they wanted the energy tax credits much, much harsher. And they've rolled back to being weaker to a degree in the Senate version. So you put those two things together, and that's on the hardline deficit hawk side, that's going to be a problem. And then the Medicaid cuts are still much more harsh in the Senate bill than they were in the House bill. Now, there is a rural hospital fund that was doubled in the final version from $25 billion to $50 billion, but that's still a fraction of the nearly $1 trillion in Medicaid cuts over 10 years that are going to be in this bill. And there are some House moderates who have said these Medicaid cuts are a bridge too far. I can't vote for this bill. So you put that all together, they can only lose 3 votes. Tom Massey is one. He's not going to vote for this bill. Let's say they get one, they minimize their losses to maybe one guy. There's a guy, David Valadao, who's in the Central Valley of California. His district has the second highest concentration of Medicaid recipients in the country. He's probably not voting for this bill. So that's 2. So you can only lose one more and pass the bill on the House side, which means you have to accommodate the Freedom Caucus and make sure that they pass this version of the bill. Ultimately, what this comes down to is who's going to defy Donald Trump? Massey will, because he's done it all the time. Valadao voted for Trump's impeachment. He doesn't mind going against him. But who else is going to? Who else is going to say to Donald Trump, I'm not passing your agenda? Because I don't like this part or that part. They're going to have to prove to me that they're willing to do that.
I got a couple of questions. So there's 30 members of the House Freedom Caucus. If they had put down a real hard line on this, if they accept this, there's no point to them. right? I mean, I'm just like, I'm trying to give people some sense of like how they can do this. If you live in a red district with the House Freedom Caucus, your congressperson does not know what your politics are. I would call that office and go, I put you in there for fiscal sanity. And if you could actually vote for this, there's no point in having a Freedom Caucus.
I'd like to see the delta of Majority Report viewers who live in hard right conservative districts, but maybe there are some.
Oh, we have a lot. You'd be surprised. In fact, those are some of the most intense audience members because they have to basically be inside.
There's another thing that those Freedom Caucus members have to think about, and that is Elon Musk. So Elon Musk is very much against this bill, partially on the energy grounds, but also on the fact that it doesn't cut enough spending for his liking. Like, he is a kind of a hard right Tea Partier at this point. Elon Musk. And he is the world's richest man, and he has a lot of money to fund primary challenges against Freedom Caucus members if they don't adhere to the deal that they set up just a few months ago.
So when you call those Freedom Caucus House members, say you are personally writing Elon Musk and asking him to fund a primary challenger to them. In terms of the House moderates, the COLA stuff that they wanted seems to be more or less close to what they wanted. They wanted 40,000.
You're talking about SALT?
SALT, I'm sorry.
SALT. So, yeah, as far as the state and local tax deduction is concerned, they again, to make this look cheaper, did a partial change to that deduction cap. So the SALT caucus wanted to change from you can write off $10,000 of your state and local taxes on your federal taxes. They wanted to up that to $40,000. That the ultimate deal is that is true for only 5 years. So once again, they use this current law baseline to make those look cheaper, even though they could now, the precedent is set, they could come back and make it permanent and it would cost $0, right? So one member of the SALT caucus, this guy Nick LaLota in New York, said, "I don't agree with that. I'm not going to vote for that." But we kind of, you know, I'm a little skeptical of him as well, whether he'll actually defy Trump on that.
And those are now the three votes that they can afford to lose. Is Jerry Conley's seat filled?
It's not filled. They had a primary. The general election doesn't happen, I believe, until September.
So it's only three votes they can afford to lose, even without Connolly's vote in the,
without
in the House?
Connolly, even without Raul Grijalva, even without there was another member of the House Democrats who died. Even with all three of those gone, they can only lose three votes. If they were there, they would only need be able to lose two votes.
It would be nice if we didn't have so many people in the Democratic caucus pass sure. away.
Yeah.
What do you think the chances are? I mean, it goes over to the House. It feels like that this is going to happen. Like that it's unlikely that anybody's going to buck Donald Trump.
I mean, as I said, they have to show me that they're willing to do that before I would believe it. So maybe it'll happen. If the Freedom Caucus actually believed in the principles they espouse, this bill would not pass, right? But I don't believe that they do. I they have to show me that they're willing to buck Donald Trump in order to do that.
I want to go back to the beginning of the year a little bit, because when this first when the first budget resolution was passed, the one that sets up like sort of the umbrella to allow reconciliation to happen, there was a sense by all of the sort of like conventional wisdom people, like the top sort of like Democrats, that this was never going to pass, that they weren't going to be able to do it. And they were surprised that Johnson got it across the threshold. And I think to a certain extent, the threat of Elon Musk primarying was underestimated as an incentive factor.
Well, here's what I'd say. Going into 2025, Mike Johnson had no track record of legislative success. And we were coming out of a two-year session where the caucus was so fractured and so divided that they couldn't even do basic things like hang on to a speaker. So there was some reason to believe that it was going to be problematic for Johnson to get the herd of cats in line. So I don't disagree with that. I think that it was certainly the conventional wisdom, and there was good reason for it. There was actual evidence for that. What I think was underplayed is the degree to which the Republican Party is just Donald Trump's party.
Right.
And if Donald Trump wants something, he's likely to get it. And so that has really that has informed this entire process.
Once they pass this bill, it's basically done, right? I mean, their legislative session. I mean, I guess there's the 2026 budget, but it's
there's
largely
a 2026 budget. There's, you know, the crypto bill only passed the Senate, so they got to figure out what to do in the House with that. There are some other things here and there that need to be done. But yes, this was the entire agenda. Now, one thing that's being talked about, and this is particularly as an enticement to the Freedom Caucus, is Mike Johnson has started floating, oh, we'll do another reconciliation bill in 2026. And we'll get you the you know, you don't like that there aren't enough spending cuts in this one. That one will do all spending cuts. And we'll get you the spending cuts you need in the 2026 version of the reconciliation bill. And that may be enough to get the Freedom Caucus on board. They'll say, oh, well, we're going to do this next year. Now, whether they actually do it next year, who knows?
But I was going to say, are they aware that 2026 is an election year? But it does feel like the Republicans know that, I mean, the way that they govern, the way that they legislate, I should say, they do it like they know they are going to get voted out of office no matter what in the next election. And so we're going to do as much as we can.
If you hear from some liberals, they'll say they're voting like they think they're never going to be voted out of office. And I don't necessarily subscribe to that. It's sort of a bit conspiratorial for me that they're not going to hold elections next year or something like that. But I think your way of framing it is more correct, that when Republicans get in office, they realize they have limited political capital and they start spending it as fast as they can.
Anything else we left on the table? I mean, this is going to be like a real world disaster for many people. Is there any, what was the last piece of legislation?
I will tell you the strangeness around the Murkowski deal. So Murkowski got, she got those little tax credits and everything, but she got two big things, which was to, this was in the original deal, to increase the federal share of Medicaid for Alaska and to waive what is called the cost sharing of the SNAP program, which is more commonly known as food stamps for Alaska, whereby the state of Alaska would have to pay into a federal share of to maintain that program. Typically, SNAP is entirely paid for at the federal level. This would be the first time states would have to participate, and states don't have that money, and it would lead to, you know, severe cuts to the SNAP program. So she wanted both of those. The parliamentarian threw both of those out, and they worked really hard to get the Medicaid thing back in, and it didn't work. The parliamentarian, literally, they were. This was on C-SPAN. The parliamentarian was standing at the desk with a handwritten amendment, and there was a debate happening between staffers of the Republican and Democratic caucus, and the parliamentarian said, no, we can't do that Medicaid thing. However, they did get this cost-sharing waiver for Alaska, but it's not just for Alaska, because the parliamentarian threw it out thinking, well, this is just the policy for one state. This is so you can get that. So they expanded that cost sharing to the 10 states with the highest payment error rates in SNAP. They get more time to before they do the cost sharing. That includes New York. That includes New Jersey. It includes Maryland. It includes Massachusetts. It includes Oregon, a host of blue states. Now get this benefit along with Alaska because they needed it to buy Murkowski's vote. Now, so here's this program. The program is supposed to be, we're going to make it make SNAP more efficient. So we're going to give you an incentive if you have low error rates in your program, and we're going to punish you if you have high error rates in your program. However, now, because the high error rates get an exemption, you're only punishing the people in the states in the middle now in terms of error rates. The people on the low side don't have to pay the federal cost share. The people on the high side don't have to pay the federal cost share. Only the states in the middle have to pay, which makes no sense whatsoever. And as Amy Klobuchar said on the Senate floor, this is an incentive for more errors in SNAP. That's
because it gets you into the top 10. It's almost like you want to you're going to throw the last couple of games of a season. Right. So you get a higher lottery pick.
Yeah, there's tanking going on now. So this is the kind of backwards lawmaking that we've engaged in order to for Republicans to pass this bill.
What was the name I think it was during the Obama years, the Golden Gate giveaway or whatever it was?
Well, there was the Cornhusker kickback.
That's what it was. The Cornhusker. This is what that is.
It is what that is. And except I call it the Alaska Gold Rush. But you could call it the Kodiak kickback, I assume. But the point is that Murkowski, look, I mean, there's a world in which every senator should be fighting for their state.
Right.
And, you know, Josh Hawley looks like an idiot. He didn't get anything from Missouri the way that Murkowski did for Alaska. All of these other senators didn't fight as hard for their states as Murkowski did. And, you know, if they did, maybe we wouldn't have any of these Medicaid cuts or SNAP cuts.
Where does Josh Hawley's perspective on place him on the populist meter?
I think he's forfeited that completely by voting for this bill. He came out and gave this whiny speech about how, you know, this shouldn't be what the Republican Party is. We shouldn't be cutting Medicaid, even though he's voting to cut Medicaid. And
that's some real leadership. That's called leadership.
And now his theory is, oh, I can cut off some of these taxes at the pass or cut off some of these Medicaid cuts down the road. And good luck to you on that one, Josh.
Well, he wanted to be able to make the changes from the inside and be one of the people who are voting. David Dayan, thanks so much for hopping on and walking us through this. It's folks should be checking out the prospect on a daily basis to get this information in a way that nobody else has. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, folks. Before we go into the fun half of the program, let's put up a Washington phone number. Again, this is one of those situations where if you live in a Republican district, you can actually, you know, make their vote a little bit more difficult. If you live in a Freedom Caucus or House Freedom Caucus district, you can make their vote a little more difficult. You can say, honestly, I'm going to write Elon Musk and hope that he finances your primary. They have made they have put their flag in the ground as stalwart defenders of the deficit or debt, and now you can tell them. You know what's happening. Do we have a number?
Yeah. I'm looking for a good 202-224-3121. I'm looking for a good way to display it, but that's the number, 202-224-3121.
That's 202-224-3121. Also, we should tell you that the results
We can put it on a Chyron.
Okay. We'll put up that number. And we should also tell you the results of the final results of the New York mayoral race is out. And it would appear, or it looked like Mamdani won by 7 percentage points the first round of voting. You'll recall he did not cross the 50% threshold. So therefore, the final results would have to go into the ranked choice voting process. And it appears, sadly, for Andrew Cuomo, that he lost in the second round by over 10 percentage points. Is that right, guys?
56 to 44, I saw. It's exactly 12.
If I believe that, if I'm counting correctly, it is that is 12 points.
Put this up.
What that's going to do, it doesn't change anything. And this, again, is the number that you can contact your congressperson.
This is Senate, but it's the same number.
202-224-3121. And who should be calling that is if you are in a Republican district. I mean, it's important to call your Democratic congresspeople too. Tell them they better take that vote. They better show up there. Nobody should be taking an early July 4th vacation. Make sure you're there for that vote. Apparently, Jeffries is doing a caucus meeting this afternoon. But if you're in a Republican district, you can add some pressure to them. If it's a so-called moderate, tell them these cuts to Medicaid are absolutely unconscionable. And if it's in a Freedom Caucus, tell them that there's not enough cuts. This hinky math where they're pretending like the baseline is different than it is, you see right through that. And in fact, right now you're sitting down to write a handwritten letter to Elon Musk, begging him to finance a primary of your congressperson. Meanwhile, Zoran Mamdani in the second round wins by 12 percentage points in this mayoral election. The only thing that I think like the implications of this are, if you're Andrew Cuomo, and particularly there's a New Yorker, I think New York Magazine article that's come out that shows just how lazy Cuomo is. And incompetent. But if you are, if you're a big donor, you're not going to look at these numbers and be encouraged that you're going to get your money. There's going to be any type of return on investment. So that's pretty good stuff. We're going to head to the fun half. Folks, a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, but you also get the fun half. Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code majority. You get 10% off. They've got all sorts of different coffees there, and they're a co-op. They really support their farmers. Great company, great coffee, justcoffee.coop. You can get the Majority Report blend there. It's a wonderful conversation starter. Folks over, you bring the coffee bag on the platter in which you serve the coffee. Also, don't forget AM Quickie, amquickie.com. Get the news in a very easy to read, quick digest every morning to your email box, amquickie.com. Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning?
Yeah, tonight on Left Reckoning, talking Zoran again with Ashiq Siddiqui of the DSA. So I look forward to that. And then also talking about another type of Democrat, Colin Allred, who has announced he's running again in Texas to make a lot of money for consultants again. So check this out tonight, patreon.com/leftreckoning.
Quick break, fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now.
But I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second.
The Majority Report.
Unpacked. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Unpacked.
Matt.
You.
Unpacked.
What is up, everyone?
Unpacked.
Nomi Key.
You did it.
Unpacked.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
Unpacked.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this
7-8?
Yes.
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you?
No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start
off. Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though. Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say.
857-210-3501.
One half.
3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$3 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop.
Call it satire. Sam goes satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt.
Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out.
I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Back.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Emma Viglin out for the rest of the week for her honeymoon. We will get the phones fired up in a moment or two. Matt, you got those phones?
Oh, yeah. Let me go do that.
We'll call into those. Jody from Chicago, the good news is that Fetterman can go finally go to his beach vacation. If his family is lucky, they have already ended their beach vacation. Got a couple of clips on how they're trying to sell desperately these Medicaid cuts. There we go. We're going to be back online with those phones in a moment. On Fox Business News this morning, Representative Claudia Tenney from New York, I think she's from the 24th district, if I'm not mistaken. That would be up near the Finger Lakes. And I got to imagine she's got a significant portion of people on Medicaid, trying to justify the vote that she's going to have to take in the House probably over the next day or two on devastating Medicaid for gosh knows how many tens of thousands of people in her district. Here is Tenney on with Morning with Maria on Fox Business.
And another part of this Medicaid that is, I'm just tired of hearing about the Democrats screaming that people are going to lose their health care. I've said this over and over. There are about 19 million people in the state of New York. 8 million are receiving Medicaid. About 5 million of those 8 million are actually eligible. So yeah. All we're doing is saying, let's
strengthen the Medicaid program. First of all, we should say the CBO, not the Democrats, have come up with this figure of all the people losing Medicaid. But can we go back to how many she is saying are illegally on Medicaid, are ineligible for Medicaid? Because the numbers are astonishing.
It's a huge number.
That is a huge number. Let's hear that again.
And another part of this Medicaid that is, I'm just tired of hearing about the Democrats screaming that people are going to lose their health care. I've said this over and over. There are about 19 million people in the state of New York. 8 million are receiving Medicaid. About 5 million of those 8 million are actually eligible. So all we're doing is saying, let's strengthen the Medicaid program that is for the
Wait a second. I'm sorry. Did she must have missed. What was the 19 figure she gave?
That's the state population in New York.
Okay. 8 million are on Medicaid and only 3 million of them are eligible?
No, 3 million of them are scamming is what she's implying.
Oh, I see. So only 5 million are eligible. There are 3 million people who are committing Medicaid fraud in New York State alone?
Does she even know what she's saying?
In that case, we should definitely
million people scamming for health, just for healthcare.
That feels like a concerted effort. I mean, that's pretty impressive. She's lying, of course. I mean, God knows where she got that figure. Like, I don't even know if we could find where that figure came from. Like Alex Jones, maybe, or something. I mean, this is complete insanity. And she's lying, and she's trying to justify her vote. But the people in her district are going to know it. This is the biggest cut. Almost 12 million are going to lose insurance because of these cuts. This is essentially a rollback of the best part of the ACA. And they're doing it in not so many words because they failed at it so many times in the past.
Easier when you don't name it the take away healthcare thing and then just say, actually, we need to do this to make the government efficient and give Border Patrol bonuses.
It's going to provide, let's go over again. $350 billion for the border and national security agenda. That includes $46 billion for a U.S.-Mexican border wall. I'm so old, I remember when Mexico was going to pay for this. $45 billion for 100,000 migrant detention facility beds. What does that come per person? Can somebody do that math?
What were those numbers again?
$45 billion divided by 100,000. We're going to spend more on putting migrants in detention than
450,000.
450,000 per person. Oh, incidentally, student loans are also going to take a massive hit in this. There's money for 10,000 new immigration and custom enforcement officers. And they get a $10,000 signing bonus for being a total jackass.
That's some balaclavas with that.
Exactly. Oh, I can go out and get a new brown shirt. All right. Meanwhile, the AI provision of this, there was a provision in the bill that was going to create a 10-year moratorium on states' ability
to in any way regulate AI. And that is a very narrow AI sounds a lot more narrow than it is. It would have meant anything almost algorithmic. Things like rent price fixing websites. I mean, a whole host of things would have been outside of the state's purview. That was voted out. Here's Steve Bannon with Mike Davis talking about this is quite a turnaround. The vote was something like 99-1 to strip it out of the bill. Now, Bannon's very excited because he really has a problem with folks like Elon Musk because Elon Musk has a problem with him. And so this is part of this little intra-MAGA fight, I guess you could call it. Again, it's not ideological at the end of the day. It really is just which one of them wants to be closer to Donald Trump.
Of course, after midnight, they thought they had this one. At 4 o'clock in the morning, there was a 99-1 vote, which shows you no senator, when exposed, wanted to be near this thing. This is the kind of radioactive vote that they don't want attached to their. And the only guy that voted for is Tillis, who's leaving and needs a job as a lobbyist, obviously, with AI. It is the shift in this from actually being a done deal after weeks and weeks and weeks. That's how powerful the broligarchs are, to 99-1 against, you know, what, 16, 17, 18 hours later. Walk us through that, sir.
Yeah, 10 a.m. This was a done deal for the AI oligarchs. They thought they were going to get 10 years of amnesty. They worked on getting a deal with Marsha Blackburn, who opposed them on this, and she's been a fierce warrior. I know she's going to try to come on your show after the vote. She's been great on that. She was able to work out because they thought this was just inevitable, so she was trying to cut her losses. And so she went from 10 years to 5 years, and there was some language that purported to protect kids, creators, conservatives from censorship. But as we pointed out on the show yesterday, that language was largely hollow. And so we went back to Blackburn. I worked very closely with Senator Blackburn's chief of staff all day, all afternoon, all evening. I'll give Katie Lane a shout out. She's one of my good friends. Her husband, Bill Lane, used to volunteer for the Article 3 Project as a lawyer. Now he's a nominee to be a top Pentagon lawyer. I worked very hand in glove with Katie Lane and Grace and the War Room posse and Steve Bannon. And we worked with the senior members of the
White House. Talking about more people than was necessary in the Senate to actually get the votes here. This sounds like a lot of of grandstanding. I think it was just because Ted Cruz wanted it so badly that everybody wanted to screw him over.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad it's not in there, but you know, the rest of the bill is an atrocity.
Absolute atrocity. Here is Scott Bessent on with Brian Kilmeade, and he is pushing again. I mean, this is impressive how the Republicans hold on to this notion that if you cut taxes, you actually raise revenue. This was what George Herbert Walker Bush called 40 years ago, voodoo economics. This is what the people of Kansas had a firsthand experience with when Sam Brownback, the governor there, brought in Arthur Laffer of the Laffer Curve to map out how they could cut taxes and raise revenue. And within 2 years, the Kansas had devastated their revenues so much by cutting taxes that a completely controlled Republican legislature voted to raise taxes. And yet, Scott Bessent still able to peddle this garbage. Now, to be fair, it's on Fox and Friends.
Taking advantage of the system, we're going to put in a work requirement, and we're just trying to get the levels back to where we were pre-COVID, which I don't think anybody disagrees with.
Elon Musk says this.
It's obvious with this insane spending bill, increases the debt ceiling by $5 trillion. We live in a one-party country, the Porky Pig Party. Time for a new political party that actually cares about the people. And he's probably going to start one if this passes. What's your reaction? You guys famously tangled in the White House.
I admire Elon's leadership on rockets. I will take care of the finances.
So do you feel as though he says the $5 trillion added to the deficit, you don't agree?
Am I mistaken, but hasn't the last six Musk rockets exploded?
Yeah.
They also, wasn't the last one didn't even get off the ground and it exploded or something?
It would have been nice for him to have said this back when Doge was a thing, too. Like, why are we trusting the rocket guy with this stuff?
All right, let's go back. I mean, because Besant's about to make his pitch about how this is like, by cutting, we're actually going to get more revenue. Besant also seems to have like picked up a Grecian formula habit, too. Have you noticed that? Or is that
a Grecian formula?
Yeah.
I'll have to ask you about that later.
Well, I guess that's maybe
in the White House.
I admire Elon's leadership on rockets. I will take care of the finances.
So do you feel as though he says the $5 trillion added to the deficit? You don't agree?
I don't agree at all. Let me tell you why. Because this bill will set off growth like we've never seen before. The CBO projections only project 1.8% per year growth, which is substantially below what we saw in President Trump's first term. And I think we are going to see big acceleration here. And once you see the growth trajectory change to an upward bias, the bill more than pays for itself. You know, we could be in surplus.
So let's talk about the trade.
Let me just explain what he's saying there. First of all, Trump promised 4% growth on these tax cuts back in the first term. It wasn't anywhere close to that. And if anything, you had years of recovery that came from the 2008 crisis,
right?
That attributed for a lot of that growth. But nevertheless, the idea that keeping a baseline of tax cuts is going to create growth is absurd. Nobody has any more money. There's no reason. There's no more money that's available for to go into the economy. Instead, what you're doing is you're destroying rural hospitals, and you're going to see a contraction there. You're cutting people off of food stamps. So people are going to buy less food, which is going to ripple through the economy. And the idea that, like, if you had a bias, as he says, towards growth, in other words, if you believed in the complete voodoo economics that cutting taxes will increase your revenue, well, then everything will be fine. It's absurd.
If it was always 25-mile-per-hour wind, I'd run 7-minute miles every time.
Exactly. You know, if you have a bias for me having a capacity to fly, traffic would never be a problem for me. But people just refuse to have that bias.
You know, if we just say we're going to have the gravity of Mars, I'll be able to dunk, so.
But you'll be out of breath. I think if you go to Mars, it makes you, there's less oxygen, right? Isn't that the problem?
That's what I hear.
There was some hot Trump on Elon action last night. I don't know if anybody saw that. Was that my own personal feed or?
Yeah, that's your For You page.
Oh, yeah. That's there's an OnlyFans page that has specifically set up for me to see this. Let's hear. Do we have do we have any of their? Oh yeah, here it is. Okay, I don't know. Last night, which one went first, Elon or Trump? I don't know. I think it was Elon, right? This is number 9.
Oh yeah, yeah. Elon attacked the bill first, I think.
Okay, here is Elon on. This is on Twitter. Can you believe that we are now in this position where we're seeing like These two guys have their own social media sites where they put these messages. We are so effed as a country and maybe a world, but this is where we are. Here's Elon Musk threatening to primary everyone who campaigned to reduce government spending, which incidentally is every single Republican. Always pretend like they're going to do this. Every member of Congress who campaigned on reducing government spending and then immediately voted for the biggest debt increase in history should hang their head in shame, and they will lose their primary next year if it is the last thing I do on this earth. Now.
Next year, and then it's the last thing I do on this. Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of hope in that.
A little bit of naivety,
both that,
too.
Both that they will all lose their primaries and will have weaker candidates on the ballot. And then also, if Elon doesn't do it, here's Donald promise. Trump. Exactly. He made a promise just like he's mad that those candidates broke the promise. Here is Donald Trump's response on his social media site.
Elon Musk knew long before he so strongly, capital E, endorsed me for president.
Wait, don't we? Here it is. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Endorsed me for president that I was strongly against the EV mandate. It is ridiculous and was always a major part of my campaign. Electric cars are fine, but not everyone should be forced to own one. Elon may get more subsidy than any human being in history. Well, I mean, yeah. By far and without subsidies, Elon will probably have to close up shop and head back home to South Africa. No more rocket launches, satellites, or electric car production, and our country would save a fortune. Perhaps we should have Doge take a good hard look at this. Big money to be saved.
Oh, my God. And here is Trump this morning. I mean, at one point, he's like sort of implying that maybe we deport Elon Musk.
I knew it was going to get here.
Let's play this.
We got a lot of hostages back, but we're going to talk about guys.
The question there was from the person was, are you thinking about deporting Elon Musk for folks who can't hear it over the airplane, I guess.
I don't know. I think we'll have to take a look. We might have to put Doge on Elon. You know what Doge is? Doge is the monster that might have to go back and eat Elon. Wouldn't that be terrible? He gets a lot of subsidies, Peter. But Elon's very upset that the EV mandate is going to be terminated. And you know what? When you look at it, not everybody wants an electric car. I don't want an electric car. I want to have maybe gasoline, maybe electric, maybe a hybrid, maybe someday a hydrogen. If you have a hydrogen car,
hydrogen.
There's one problem. It blows up, you know? So I'm going to give that one to Peter. I'm going to let Peter test it out.
He literally did an ad for Tesla's. Like he literally said, I just bought this electric car.
He turned the Rose Garden into a car dealership and said, it's all computer. Look at that. It's amazing.
Amazing. How do you turn this computer on and off? I need my son here. He's very good at that. I mean, I think there's a value in this fight only to the extent that Musk may mess with Republican politics.
Yeah. But as it stands, it's kind of like Trump benefited from Elon soaking up a lot of flack in the first part of his administration. And now that Elon is unpopular, he's getting to punch him around and get the benefit of that, of look at me fighting against this guy. Maybe it's hurting him. I don't know. I feel like people hate Elon more than they hate Trump, and that's kind of a problem.
Yeah, I think so. It really is just a question of how much of Elon Musk's money is he willing to deploy out of spite, knowing that he got basically completely played by Donald Trump.
The genius Rocket Man was surprised that Republicans were insincere about the budget and were mainly just concerned with cutting taxes. I guess, you know, if a genius like that was didn't know what to expect, what hope is there for the rest of us?
I know it. Number 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920 is the number. We will take your calls in a moment. First, some IMs. Socialist Masshole breaking news. Jimmy Swaggart died. I didn't really realize that he was still alive. Snapdragon Apple. Snapdragon. Hey, I'm our crew, Emma in absentia. Yesterday was a horrible day for ICE raids in L.A. Multiple Home Depots, including Cypress Park, Hollywood, and North Hollywood, were all raided. Even the flower sellers by Forest Lawn Cemetery near Warner Brothers were taken. Please consider volunteering to watch for ICE at your local Home Depot or area with street vendors or laborers. Most Home Depot watches are from 6:30 to noon. Show up for however long you can. The Cypress Park location, which is close to Silver Lake and Highland Park, is from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m., is well organized. Wear a mask. And if you see these cowards out raiding, staging, or just driving, contact LA Rapid Response. The LA Rapid Response number is 213-444-6562. That's 213-444-6562. Or you can post to a local Signal or WhatsApp chat to give everyone more notice. Good stuff. Let's put that number in the podcast and YouTube description too, please. If you're in LA. 213-444-6562. CPG, Sam saying Delta Neen, like he's Cool Hand Luke's warden, made my day. Okay, so Nassau County spokesperson, ranked choice voting drop, Mamdani beats Cuomo 56-44. Is that the last round or the first round?
I think that was in the second round.
Delgado is running for governor. That is going to really change the calculation, I think. Kathy Hochul's calculation in terms of the way that she deals with Mamdani in the event that he wins the election.
Do you see Kathy Hochul cutting an ad about riding the bus about how she's expanding congestion pricing?
It's so she funny. Has really interesting political instincts. A little bit late. Mama's Fistulas? I can't be. Hey, y'all, just can't tune in live today. I just want to recommend a guest. Current state of various civil rights fights in Texas. Ash Hall, representative of the ACLU of Texas. We'll check into that. Mr. Yeast. Big, beautiful bill passes. Yes. Dylan Conklin. Trump is having Marco Rubio review Syria's status as a state sponsor of terror. What does this say about our foreign policy and what Republican orthodoxy is on terror at this point? The way they talk about it makes no sense. They've got some overarching plan for the Middle East that I suspect is driven by some real estate opportunities that have been offered to the Trump family. That would be my guess. The mill rind, the big ball of mud just passed. Yep. Krusty Gnome. My parents are anti-immigrant, and the one thing they always complained was that they used the ER as their PCP. This bill is going to cause so much more people to use the ER as their primary care provider that the immigrants who used it paled in comparison.
I mean, just a classic case of a societal issue where we're underinvesting in things like healthcare and doctors and emergency rooms and taking it out on the most unfortunate people.
Krusty Gnome says, were the no tax on tip or no overtime tax in this bill? They were in this bill. They are sunset within 4 or 5 years, as opposed to all the other corporate tax provisions and income tax provisions. And I don't know the details in the latest version. We will get to that over the course of the week. Calling from an 810 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Is this me?
Yes, it is you.
This is Kelsey. I'm from Michigan.
Kelsey from Michigan, what's on your mind?
So I know you guys love talking about Alyssa Slotkin when she comes into relevance. I was just going to recommend and give a shout out to two local Michiganders who run a podcast called Head in the Office. They know a lot about local politics, really involved. They'd be a great guest, but just wanted to give them a shout out.
All right. Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Go back to the phones, calling from a 509 area code. 509 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Is this me?
It is you. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Oh, hey. This is Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan! Oh, long time no call. Into.
Man,
the show.
People be calling. Yep. You guys are crazy busy these days. So.
Well, we get a lot of calls. We have, let's see. 33 calls stacked up right now.
Hmm. Crazy. Mm-hmm. I remember the old days when you were in a closet, a literal closet, and
yep.
You'd call in. There's nobody waiting. It's like you were waiting for the call.
Yeah.
And then you just would take any call.
Now we don't have to spend a lot of time with bad callers.
Yeah, honestly... That's too bad because, you know, remember Greg?
Yeah, I do. I do remember Greg.
And anyways, shout out to Greg, wherever he is. I think Greg and Jimmy Reefercake are doing a podcast somewhere.
And I would actually listen to that.
Low key, I was going to say, like, somebody post a link to the Patreon. I'm signing up. So you're doing a really great job with the ICE stuff, the videos. I wanted to talk real quick about the stuff that happens on the back end and why what's going on is really so egregious. So a lot of the people...
Well, I should just remind people that, Ronald Reagan, that you are an immigration attorney.
True, yes.
So probably with clients
not everyone...
waiting in your lobby right now, but go ahead.
No, there's a couple here right now, but they don't speak English. They think I'm calling about their case. So, and I'm going to make some typing noises. Hold on just a second. Okay. So not everybody, but a lot of the people that are being targeted have prior removal orders. They either maybe had a hearing a long time ago and missed it. They didn't know about it. Or maybe they fought their case to the end and they lost and now they're stuck with this final removal order. One of the reasons why it's so problematic to just detain and deport somebody right away, first of all, they don't give any proof of the removal order. They tell you to FOIA it, which will take months. So you're kind of taking their word that a removal order happened, that everything happened correctly. They're also not giving people the opportunity to leave on their own. So I've had... I mean, maybe at this point, like half a dozen clients who were like in the process of getting their stuff together. It's a big deal to move countries. And they were just detained and deported. Whereas in the past, they would say, okay, look, in a month, you need to come back with proof that you've purchased a plane ticket. And if you don't, then, you know, there's a risk of being detained. But at least they were willing to work with people in that position. But just two quick stories from my past. We had a guy who was called in to do a check-in. This is probably during the Obama administration because he had missed a hearing and had a removal order. Well, we were able to do a FOIA, get the paperwork, and we saw that they delivered the hearing notice to a street and not an avenue. So he never got notice. That case was reopened. But under the current environment, there's like no way you would have the time to... first of all, they're denying any stay requests. Like if you're asking for, hey, give us a couple months, no. It's a straight no. If you ask, like, can I get copies of the hearing notice that was sent? No, you need to file a FOIA. So can the person, like, stay with their family while we investigate all this stuff? No. So that guy today 100% is getting deported. In another case, a lady came to me, again, during the Obama administration, and she'd fought her asylum case to the end, lost. With another attorney, obviously, not me.
Right.
And was being told, like, by the local ICE office, okay, you got to come back next week, like, ready to go. You're at the end of the line here. Well, she came to me, and her daughter had been a victim of a crime, and her attorney represented both her and the perpetrator of that crime and told her, like, there's no grounds for relief here. But there was. And so because ICE was willing to work with her a little bit, we were able to get an application filed, go with her to her next appointment and say, look, this is in the hopper. Like, we're working on this. She needs a little bit more time. And she's now a permanent resident. So she and her daughter both have green cards. And so even though a final removal order is final, like, who is and isn't deportable is, like, very messy. And now they're completely quota driven, so it doesn't really matter. I mean, they're deporting people in situations that don't make any sense.
Right. In other words, like, someone could decide, like, okay, I'm at the end of the line in terms of my legal recourse. I promise to leave the country within 2 or 3 weeks so that I can just, you know, say goodbye to people, get everything in order. ICE won't have that because they then lose the credit for deporting you.
Right. So we had a family, a big family that lost their case. The final order came down from the Ninth Circuit on like June 3rd. And literally a couple days later, they went to check in and they detained and deported one of the adult sons, even though the family was, I mean, they told me, like, we've never had any intention of being here illegally. We know that we lost and we're in the process of planning our return. And what this did is it rushed the rest of the family to, like, get the fuck out of here. And that wasn't somebody who was ordered removed like 20 years ago. Like, at the time they detained him, the final order came down like 2 or 3 days before. And so, and we have a guy, for example, who sometimes you have a final removal order, but you can still get your green card, but you've got to leave the country to do it. And in order to leave the country to do it, you have to file a series of waivers. And all this is so stupid, but this is the way that it works. And his first waiver was approved. And the second waiver is pending. This guy takes care of his permanent resident parents. He's got a U.S. citizen spouse, children. He's lived here since I was probably like 10. And again, the second waiver is approved. And when that second waiver is pending, when it's approved, they schedule him for an interview in Mexico. He leaves the country, goes to his interview, and gets his green card. So they call him in, and I put all this together. I'm emailing it to him. I bring in a physical copy. I explain, like, this is how part of the problem is, like, ICE literally doesn't know how the immigration system works. And some of it is ignorance and some of it is, you know, they don't care. But I guess that's the same thing. Anyways, and they detained and deported him. And it's like, well, he's coming back. Like, now he just has to spend extra time in Mexico. So it's just, it's a waste of time all around. And two quick PSAs for you and the audience. One, don't trust these guys. I had somebody recently call their father, who's the primary caretaker of his U.S. citizen adult son with Down syndrome, was detained. And the daughter said, the local officer was really nice. He said that he understood the situation, and because he was sympathetic, instead of sending him to point A, we're going to send him to point B. And it was communicated in a way that made it seem like that was a favor, but like point B is where they get deported from. And I was in the other day, and one of the officers was putting somebody on like an intensive, basically like a super, what do you call it? A surveillance program where they have to track them with phone apps, and you have to send in a picture every week and all this stuff. And they said, well, you're going to be assigned a case manager. And the immigrant said, you mean like a social worker? And the ICE agent said, yeah, kind of like that. It's not fucking anything like that. It's not a social worker, but they're happy to communicate this stuff. They tell people who don't qualify for bond, oh, you know what? You know, I'm sorry I have to do this. This isn't really, you know, it's not my decision. But here, if you sign this, you can get a bond from a judge, and a judge is going to be the one who decides. But there's no fucking judge. And they either don't know that, or they are passing that along to make themselves feel like, I'm not the real bad guy here. There's going to be somebody else further on in the process that is going to make the real tough decision. But the decision's been made, and they made it. So one, don't trust anything they say. Don't sign anything they want you to sign. I mean, unless it's something super basic that you can read and understand and you want to sign it, but like, you should not trust what they're saying. They're lying to people every single day. And then two, this is maybe like big picture stuff, but we just have to normalize the A word, amnesty. Like, there is no other way out of this other than the strong, robust amnesty period. And in the past, there's, you know, everybody's been sort of, not everybody, but a lot of people have been trepidatious about using that word because, oh, it's going to trigger the conservatives. But like, this situation where like we vacillate between slightly nicer ICE and then full-on fascist ICE and then back again, like this system is fucked for immigrants even when they're being nice. Like, the nice version of this is like, well, yeah, you don't get access to Social Security, you don't get access to the social safety net, and you live with a vague threat that this stuff could change at any moment and that your life could be ruined, but like, it probably won't be. Like, that's the good version of the current system. So I think my hope for you or other people on our side, like, if we're going to be playing these clips, even if it's a throwaway at the end, like, we need an amnesty for the people who are, you know, not just economic cogs in a machine, but their neighbors, their parents in our schools, their children are in our schools. And what's happening to them is like so fucked up, and it's not going to change if we get just, you know, somebody with a D at the end of their name. We have to have structural change. We have to put pressure on politicians to start talking this way, because ultimately they're the lawmakers.
Yep.
You guys are the ones that let the system stagnate. In some ways it was designed this way, which is even worse, but in other ways it just sort of has sat there. And so I think it's time to start sprinkling that in and letting that marinate. So
when are you going to restart redirected?
Yeah, I need to probably do that. Honestly, like, I'm not the primary victim in all this, but when you're an immigration attorney, lots of immigration attorneys charge flat fees. So, you know, for this, we'll do it for this. And it's normal for there to be fires to be put out. Oh, something weird happened. You know, we got to do that. And I'm really bad at charging or charging just, more.
It's got to be crazy right now.
My whole job is putting out fires. They're recalendering all these old cases that were closed as a matter of discretion under like Obama. So like, we have this huge family that came to me when I first started practicing in like 2012. And there were, I think there's like 15 or 16 of them. And they were, there was a disbarred attorney who filed asylum applications for all of them, promising like, you're going to get your green card. And what that does is you get a work permit temporarily, but then they deny the asylum application and put you in removal proceedings. So they came to me, sorry, this is rambling. This is the last story. They came to me in like 2012, like, we just need help renewing our green cards. And I was like, well, first of all, you don't have a green card. Second of all, like, you're going to get deported because you're now in removal proceedings. And because of the Obama enforcement priorities, all those cases were closed, quote unquote, put on the shelf, basically taken off the court's docket. And immigration, the ICE attorneys have now moved to recalendar all those cases, plus, you know, dozens more. In one day, the Seattle Immigration Court received 700 motions to recalendar.
Jeez.
Some of those people have, they already have visas, or they have other things, but they're using a boilerplate motion that says, we checked and they don't have status, but a lot of them do. So anyways, it's been pretty crazy, but I will, I'm hoping to find a co-host, maybe Greg or Jimmy Reefer Cake, if they could hit me up. I think we could tag team it and great things could happen. So,
well, people are bringing up Chris Lapaco. In the the Chris Lapaco in the
chat. There's a name from way back.
Yep. Yeah. Well, hang in
all
there.
Right, thank you.
Hang in there.
No, take care. Thanks.
Rob from Minneapolis. Reagan sounds like he's aged 25 years since he last called in. He must be exhausted. I would imagine.
His job has gotten much more difficult as of late. All right, let's have a little bit of fun. Like, let's play some Zoran Mamdani clips for a little bit of hope. Apparently, I saw this. Maybe we'll. I think it was the one of the editors of Tablet Magazine. I think it was. Not 100% sure. Was upset because he saw images of Mamdani eating with his hands, eating rice with his hands, which is apparently what
I'm seeing a lot of people use like that, use the word third worldist lately. And I just want to say, we see who you people are, and you are Nazis.
Yep. Here is Mamdani on MSNBC. This is with Kristen Welker on Meet the Press on Sunday. It's impressive stuff. I mean, he understands who his audience is in these instances, but nevertheless maintains, I think, his political ideology. Here he is with Kristen Welker.
All right. You are a self-described democratic socialist. Do you think that billionaires have a right to exist?
I don't think that we should have billionaires because, frankly, it is so much money in a moment of such inequality. And ultimately, what we need more of is equality across our city and across our state and across our country. And I look forward to work with everyone, including billionaires, to make a city that is fairer for all of them.
What's fascinating is the way that this question is structured. Do billionaires have a right to exist? It's like I was born, like it's something that's like intrinsic to them. The question isn't whether billionaires have the right to exist. Yes, they do. They should not have a right to have that much money. They can call themselves a billionaire, but they should not be allowed to have that much money. No one should be. Matt should not have the right to have $1 billion.
Sounds stressful.
No one should have the right to have $1 billion. Brian, I'm sorry. You should not have the right to have $1 billion. It is antithetical to our democracy. You can't have this type of wealth concentration. It's a problem. We see it every day. Here is Mamdani on weekend primetime on MSNBC talking about his plan for the New York Police Department. And here it is.
I've shown over the course of this campaign a clear recognition of the fact that police are critical to creating public safety across this city. And my proposal for the Department of Community Safety is one that was born out of my conversations with rank and file officers who have told me time and again their frustration with signing up to join the police force to tackle serious crimes and then being asked to play the roles of mental health professionals and social workers and fielding 200,000 mental health calls a year. And ultimately, my desire is for the police to be able to focus on those serious crimes, to be able to do their jobs by stopping asking them to respond to nearly every failure of the social safety net. And that's why we have put forward this proposal to create a department that will tackle mental health crises, homelessness, victim services, hate crimes, gun violence, so that police can go back to those seven major categories of crime we see in CompStat. Because ultimately, New Yorkers deserve to be safe. They deserve a police force that is able to focus on keeping them safe. And what we've seen is that in 2025, in the first quarter, 65% of crimes that were reported are yet to be solved. We need to make it easier for police to focus on solving those crimes. And I've been very clear, we're not defunding the police. We're sustaining the headcount of the police department and allowing them.
This is interesting to me because, first off, I totally agree that we should be taking, where I should say, I believe that we should be taking resources from police departments and putting them towards services for residents, citizens that are more appropriate. So if you have people who are having mental or emotional issues, you send someone who is trained in dealing with those things and not a cop who's going to make it end up being, you know, end in violence. And I like how he says, like, we're not going to lose the headcount. But I wonder how much overtime we're going to lose. There's a lot of opportunity to maintain the size of this police force and transfer some of that that budget line into other essentially agencies that will de-violence, de-escalate, de-police a whole host of stuff. You know, you don't need police doing the parking tickets. You don't even need police doing, in my estimation, you know, traffic stops. But this is a good way to present this to the rest of the city because, you know, not everyone in the city is a democratic socialist. But this plan to create an agency that would deal with people on the streets of New York is a completely common sense plan. There's nothing at all radical about this. It is just simply, it makes good sense. You wouldn't send a, you know, a sanitation guy to go fix the sewers. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, the NYPD is larger than a lot of militaries on this in this planet. And it's interesting, Mamdani, with India Walton up in Buffalo, she also did a similar thing where the right wing and center focused on her joining like defund of the police protests. But this position is the more socialist one as opposed to maybe more libertarian or anarchist one, where there is a role in public safety for the state. It's just not putting more and more cops on the beat to do so, taking more and more overtime.
Calling from a 304 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Is this me?
It is you.
Oh, my God. Okay. I'm sorry. I really thought I was not ever going to get an answer because the 304 is West Virginia. My name's Skylar.
Hi, Skylar.
And I'm not anywhere near Tim Pool. I just didn't want you to think I was, you know.
In a million years, I would not have known, A, that 304 is West Virginia. And B, if I thought you were Tim Pool, I would have answered immediately.
Well, I am wearing a beanie, even though it is the dead middle of summer, if that helps any discrepancies on that front at all.
All right. Well, that's good to know. I'm not going to ask why. I'm not going to question the whole beanie thing. What's on your mind?
I'm really not wearing one. I'm just so nervous. So sorry. I've been trying to call for like months now because Emma went on this whole thing a couple months ago about like how Elon Musk is really into the whole like having a bunch of children with a bunch of different women and kind of how like there's a lot of men that are like really successful billionaire type guys who are, or and even not those kind of guys, like even Nick Cannon on a lower scale, like these guys who are putting multiple children out into the world right now. It's really, really weird. But anyway, Emma gets really, really passionate about it. And I don't know if she even realizes how crazy some of the people that she brings up are, because some of those people are on like reality television and have like hundreds and hundreds of children in other countries and stuff. And I do think, and she gets really passionate about it, and I do too, because I don't understand why people don't realize how weird it is. And like, there's a lot of like racist undertones to a lot of it. And I don't know, I've been wanting to talk about it with her for so long, but I'm so happy that she's like on her honeymoon and everything. So I just thought I'd tell you guys about it real quick, because I think it's so gross and weird.
Are you there?
I am.
Oh, sorry. We just cut out for a minute.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know where it cut out, but I just wanted to bring that up and basically just thank you for taking my call. Sorry. Well, I'm so nervous.
That's okay. You did great. I appreciate the call. I wish Emma was here to hear that, but we will relay it to her when she gets back from her honeymoon.
Okay. I just one last little note. I think the impressions that are on this show, like I started listening like when Michael Brooks was still on the show and like right wing Mandela, like all of those things were so like groundbreakingly, like comedically changing for me. And you guys just do some of the best impressions and like the Donald Trumps and it just all of it is so great. I thank you guys so much.
I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Suck Schumer. Sam, did you force Emma to take leave without pay for her honeymoon? I didn't force her to do that. I just said that was what. That's your option. If you
want. Voluntary. This it's is voluntary.
Completely voluntary.
She's more than welcome to quit.
I mean, exactly. You have an option.
At will.
Yes. Of course. Of course. Yeah, and then we actually start reducing pay. For every text she doesn't answer within 30 minutes. I had a feeling that would be very lucrative while she's on her honeymoon. She's also several hours ahead of us, so if I wait late enough, I know that she won't be able to respond because she'll be sleeping. Kowalski from Nebraska. I just came to a startling realization. Sam, please sit down. We are closer to 2050 than the year 2000. Is time speeding up? Kowalski, what's happening to you is you're aging. I can tell you that I have it go by every day, I would say. I have a realization of like, oh my God, I am closer to the age of 60 than I am 50. Oh my God, I'm closer to the age of 60 than I am 55. It's insane. Marilyn Mailman. Sam, have you ever offered an invite for Tim Pool to come in studio? It's time for you to have a home game. You know what? I'm glad you brought up Tim Pool. We have a couple of clips of Tim Pool. Let's start with the first one. Get into the real fun half. Tim Pool is mad because we mocked him for his really limp support of being anti-war. Now, if you're familiar with Tim Pool's work, you're familiar with the fact that he is known as a fence sitter because he is he doesn't want to really take any real positions because most of his audience is sort of right wingers, but he wants to sort of like be able to continue to do the old Alan Combs thing, sort of like a former, you know. He was first a liberal who was, had conservative views. And then he was a sort of like a former liberal who had conservative views. And then he's sort of like an independent libertarian, you know, who has conservative views. And he doesn't like it when we point this out. He gets very, very testy about it. But here's a prime example of it. In a video that he's making complaining about us and me for pointing out that his anti-war stance is incredibly limp. This is what he does on his program. When was this from, Matt? The other day?
This was just a couple days ago. Yeah, maybe over the weekend.
And the funny thing is, he's like deep into this video, 6 minutes into this video, almost 7 minutes into this video, talking about how offended he is that we would say that he is not anti-war. And then he realizes, I guess, that he gets, he's on Rumble. He
he gets a raid so, from Stephen.
Sorry, Sam. That's a little bit confusing on the sound sheet. That bit from Rumble is him being sort of anti-war a week ago. These are two separate clips. So he didn't say the Iran thing. The Iran thing is to show kind of how he proves his anti-war stuff, and we'll kind of show that. But this first clip is him reacting to the Bernie Sanders interview with Joe Rogan last week and basically being mad at you the whole time.
Oh, wait, that's number one, but I want to see this one second. I want to do the number 16 stuff. Second. Yeah, I want to do this. So we're going back, and this is like a week ago, right?
Yeah, and this is not the clip that we reacted to. This is a week after the clip that we
reacted to. Just to make sure people are clear. We reacted to a clip where he had a couple of people on who were cheering on the attack on Iran. And here is his supposed anti-war stance after Donald Trump, who he knows his audience wants him to show fealty to, attacks Iran. And just after he gets a raid on Rumble from Steven Crowder. So for him, this is like, oh, I've got this huge, potentially new audience, but I'm in the middle of talking about Iran and I have to pretend like I'm anti-war for the people who have seen me before now, but I also have to pretend like I'm not that anti-war so that people who Steven Crowder sent to me stick around and watch. This is the dilemma that Tim Pool has.
Yeah, exactly.
The country. And it is an honor and a privilege for the raid Steven Crowder sends my way. Welcome to the Rumble morning lineup. Of course, I am entering the afternoon for all of you. I am your host, Tim Pool. Follow me on X and Instagram at TimCast. Smash that like button. Share the show right now on all your social media platforms. Turn up the knob and rip it off. Let's read the news here. From the New York Times.
Pause officials for a second. Sorry, I just have to respond to that. He's so excited. I have a new potential audience. We're going to turn up the knob and rip it off, everybody. And I should say he said that without... There was nothing ironic about it.
No.
Anyway, this is so embarrassing. But now remember, he's got a dilemma because he had already queued up the Iran stuff, which he would have never, ever, ever wanted to talk about if Crowder was on, because now he's got this dilemma. How do I maintain this position on the fence? Well, you know, bombing another country, what are you going to do?
Yeah, Crowder, a big fan of the bombing.
They don't know the fate of Iran's uranium stockpile. Both Vice President J.D. Vance and Rafael Grossi, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, acknowledged questions about the whereabouts of Iran's stockpile of near bomb-grade nuclear material. We have this story from The Telegraph. Fears over Iran's missing 400 kilograms of uranium. Now, many people are pointing out, hey, wait a minute. We got a picture of all these trucks, right? Which truck carried the uranium? Was it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Was it all of them? Some have stated, well, can't we track where these trucks go? Indeed, it's a good assessment. The issue is there's multiple trucks. You don't know what they're being loaded with, and they could be decoys. They're not there on the ground. Just because a truck is there does not mean that truck is carrying the uranium. So there could potentially be, let's just do some quick math here. How many trucks we got? We got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 trucks. Maybe. It's kind of hard. A little grainy, but it looks like about 16. You don't know which ones have trucks. These trucks could go to facilities.
Pause it. Okay. 16. So listen, he's so nervous right now. He's so nervous. He's trying to fill space without taking a position on anything. So he's going to speculate that these trucks were not taking uranium anywhere. Maybe they're all decoys. Maybe they're just taking computer equipment. Hey, guys, we're about to get bombed. Let's just, because they want to get rid of the uranium, let's take the computer equipment, and then people will think that we have removed the uranium. He's stalling now. He's trying to figure out how he walks this tightrope of maintaining an audience and his supposed anti-war status.
Four trucks could come out of each of those facilities, and those trucks get spread around. What happens? Sure, the U.S. can say, we've tracked all the trucks, but now we're dealing with 16 by 16, and then how many more? How many more locations are they not going to be able to track? Therein lies the big challenge. They say Iran claims to have smuggled almost all the country's highly enriched uranium a secret location before the U.S. launched strikes on its nuclear bases.
He's going to condemn it in a second.
Three of Tehran's most critical enrichment facilities, including its underground facility at Fordo, were pummeled by B-2 stealth bombers and a barrage of submarine-launched missiles early on Sunday. Submarine-launched missiles. That's crazy. That's crazy.
So
those are
crazy.
Long-range missiles. Very,
Sunday,
very nuts.
Sunday.
Now, the one thing I do want to say, I am not for this. I know it's a rock and a hard place, and it's easy to sit in my air-conditioned building in the middle of West Virginia with no stake in the game. Well, minimal, to be honest. It's easy to just be like, why are we doing this? Without really knowing. But that my point is, I do not feel that the U.S. has justified these strikes to the American people, the threat, the risk, etc. I don't think they did a good job. That being said, to those pilots and the crew on this mission.
Wait a second. First of all, what's the rock and hard place that the United States is in? Where's the rock and hard place? We have successfully in the past had an agreement that ensured that Iran did not create a nuclear weapon. I'm just even giving Tim the benefit of the doubt. Like the rock is that they may create a nuclear weapon. I'm not even convinced that that's a rock, frankly. But let's just, for the sake of argument, say that to be generous to Tim, we had an agreement that prevented them from developing a nuclear weapon. Although we also know from U.S. intelligence. Hasn't Tulsi Gabbard actually been in his studio?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't Tim like a huge Tulsi Gabbard? The director of national intelligence said that all of the agencies agree that they're not building a nuclear weapon. All of them agree that they have not had a nuclear weapon program since 2003. One could argue that their enriching uranium to 60% was indicative of their capacity to potentially have a capacity to build a nuclear weapon if they had the intention, which they don't have, to do. So what's the rock in the hard place? So he throws in, I'm personally against it, but look at those jets, man.
Also, I'm against it because they didn't tell me a convincing enough story.
They didn't convince us enough.
They didn't convince my audience enough.
Their PR wasn't good. So let's get down to it. Look at those jet fighters. They were able to fly. Incidentally, Iran, their air force is non-existent. Their anti-aircraft weaponry virtually non-existent. All they literally have at this point is like drones.
But those pilots,
go ahead.
Great job.
But that my point is, I do not feel that the U.S. has justified these strikes to the American people, the threat, the risk, etc. I don't think they did a good job. That being said,
didn't do a good job
to those pilots and the crew on this mission. It's amazing. 37-hour round-trip flight in these bombers with nothing but a small chemical toilet.
Whoa!
Probably in some MREs.
Holy cow!
Impressive.
I'm very anti-war, but the real story here is these guys peed in their outfits.
MREs, too. There's another vocabulary word for you.
No, they got to... They're using chemical toilets, ladies and gentlemen. Whoa! This stuff is crazy.
It's funny because I just want to play a little bit more because he talks about how efficient they are and then how actually it wasn't that much of a success. So just a little bit more.
37-hour round-trip flight in these bombers with nothing but a small chemical toilet. Probably eating some MREs. Very impressive strike. As much as I don't like the U.S. involvement, the U.S. military is the Air Force and all those involved. Terrifyingly effective and impressive.
Yes.
They're going to say officials believe that most of the material at Fordo and Iran's other facilities had been moved elsewhere.
Whoops.
Efficiently bombing a place that's no longer a target.
they bombed a place that Iran knew had none of the valuable stuff that they wanted to protect. But they probably ate a MRE. Why?
I just want to say I'm against this. I'm a big idiot in the air-conditioned studio, but...
Why would you need an MRE? Why wouldn't you, like, just have food that was made, like, well, it wouldn't last. It would probably have to be, you know, like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich as opposed to something that might need refrigeration.
Yeah, I think 37 hours in an airplane is a little bit different than, like, being in Vietnam or something.
My God. So, all right, but that is, you know, just to point out Tim Pool's bona fides. But the funny part is that when we did this video a couple of weeks ago, Tim must have gotten very, very mad. And just to fill in the backstory here for you, Tim invited me to his studio a couple of days before the election. And this is after he had said that I was blacklisted from every show and that he would never, ever have me back on, because the first time he interviewed me, which was remote, incidentally, I sort of humiliated him, and it became a meme for a long time about his use of Thanos and his complaints that I didn't have a sense of being deontological, or what was it?
It's consequentialism versus deontologism.
Yeah, or consequentialist. And that, I'm like Thanos. And he got really embarrassed by that. And then he tried again to invite me down there. And literally when I got up to leave his studio, he said, "They're mad at me." And he's sitting at his computer. And I had to rush home. And I said, "Who's mad at you?" I thought his staff. And he goes, "My audience. They're mad at me."
Yep.
Because I kept agreeing with everything you were saying.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, good. I'm actually very glad to hear that." And then I left. And I think he's been seething since then.
Yeah.
He's very angry. And this is how he started off his video about war and Bernie, I guess. This is a different video. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is a recent one.
This is the one where he started off a video about Bernie and Rogan because he's so mad. He wanted to make sure that it got views. He wanted to be able to tell his audience how mad he was. But what I find fascinating about it, and sure, you know, we like to occasionally 2.5 hours into our show to have a little bit of a drama video. What I find interesting about it is what he considers to be the news. I just want to make this clear. When we do a video of Tim Pool, we're having fun making fun of an idiot.
Yeah.
It's not news. The news part of the show, when we talk about Tim Pool, is over. Here is Tim Pool.
Just talk about the data.
Sorry, let me slow that down. That was a little bit fast there.
But when you don't know anything, it looks like someone is intentionally lying because you never checked. So the issue then for liberals who are in prominent positions, they know they only maintain their political power by misleading those who don't read the news and don't pay attention. And then for the average person who is actually just consuming news through sources, right? I'll put it this way. What is the difference between you?
People consume news through sources. Is that what the average people do?
I was going to say that too. What does he mean by that? By the sources for the journalists, or does he mean like the actual Fox News is the source I'm citing? It's hard to be sure.
News and don't pay attention. And then for the average person who is actually just consuming news through sources, right? Mm. I'll put it this way: what is the difference between you and any other liberal viewer? You watch this show where you're more likely to get something closer to the truth, and I show every news article in every segment that I make. So
pause
when I say something...
Pause it for a second. When I was on his program and took him to task for his lies about Social Security, he literally said to me, "I only read the first two paragraphs of the story."
Yeah,
So the story existed. He shows a screenshot of the story, but he doesn't read any further into it than he does show on the screen.
But he showed it, Sam, so he should get some credit, even if the information was contradicting
what
he was
saying. The
news
thing exists. I didn't write it myself.
Didn't invent this.
Like Joe Rogan and Bernie Sanders spar over big money in politics after Sanders complains about Musk's spending. There is a news source behind this. Perhaps they could be wrong, and sometimes they are. But it's not me asserting something to be the case. It's me referencing something claiming to be the case. Sometimes it's CNN, The New York Times, Politico, or in this instance, Fox News. These liberals don't do that. Or if they do, they take them out of context intentionally. That's the game they play. My favorite, of course, is everybody's favorite liberal, Sam Cedar. I'm just kidding, by the way. He's actually one of the smallest personalities. To be fair. He's...
Wait a second. Can we find some small personalities that we can talk about? As opposed to... he is
looming
so...
large in my imagination. I'm not mad at all.
I'm only obsessed with him, but he's actually very small. That's the point. That's the point I'm trying to make. He's very, very small. He's so small that we never even talk about him. Except for right now, we're going to talk about Bernie and then Sam Cedar.
can talk about Joe Rogan and Bernie through the lens of Sam Cedar.
Yes,
and what
exactly.
He did to me.
These liberals
Sam
don't do
Cedar,
that.
When he doesn't do any sources, everything, he's just completely, you never see him have a picture on his screen of the article. Why is that?
Or if they do, they take them out of context intentionally. That's the game they play. My favorite, of course, is everybody's favorite liberal, Sam Cedar. I'm just kidding, by the way. He's actually one of the smallest personalities. To be fair, he's a big personality, but he's a small fish in a big pond. You know what I'm saying?
Wait a second. Am I everybody's favorite, or am I actually a small personality, or am I a big fish in a small pond?
What's the pond?
Well, the small pond must be liberals. So what is he talking about? Who cares? Who's watching then him? I mean, we're in such a small pond. What difference does it make to him?
The point is, I'm not mad.
I'm just kidding, by the way.
This is my longest way of saying I am not angry. I have not just been seeing a video and realized that I embarrassed myself again, and Sam Cedar pointed it out to a bunch of people. That is not what this is about.
Play. My favorite, of course, is everybody's favorite liberal, Sam Cedar. I'm just kidding, by the way. He's actually one of the smallest personalities. To be fair, he's a big personality, but he's a small fish in a big pond. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
He made a video saying my anti-war stance was a grift. Then he went on to show other people's opinions, not mine, and attack my argument. Because
Matt, do you remember that video?
Absolutely.
Where were those other people's opinions?
They were in the room with him,
to
him.
They were on his show talking to him, and he agreed with what they were saying. Is that?
Yeah, he participated in the conversation, in fact.
Well, the problem I had in understanding what he's saying is he didn't have a picture of all those people in the room. And so I don't know if that's real.
Yeah, this was the thing.
I need a visual aid.
It was about their story about how Trump sort of knew that Israel was going to strike. This was 2 weeks at least ago.
Okay.
I am anti-intervention, was very critical of Trump's strikes on Iran, but he's got to lie.
We just played how very critical he was talking
he was
about
so critical.
Those great pilots.
I disagree with, but it was awesome and it was a rock and a hard place. What are you going to do? Go ahead.
The reality is, I am anti-intervention, was very critical of Trump's strikes on Iran, but he's got to lie to his audience because he's evil. That's what he does. He actually came on the show.
Hold on for a second, please. I am very evil. I'm here to destroy you.
Malevolence.
No. Somebody better animate this. Go ahead.
Went on some. He asked me a hypothetical about conservatives' views on abortion, and then started ranting about something I didn't say, and finished up by saying, "That's the clip I was trying to get." Outright.
Actually, he made Tim admit that anybody who was, say, a rape victim should have to go through the legal procedure before they're allowed to get an abortion, barring that, shouldn't be allowed to get an abortion.
I feel like it was even yes.
He said it's actually irresponsible of a rape victim to not report the crime, and it's on them to have the child if they don't want to report the crime.
Yeah.
Now, incidentally, incest, parents, like, I mean, he could have played that clip to let us know exactly the hypothetical and the complete nonsense that I had there. But yeah. He knows that it was so embarrassing to him that his audience would never want to see that clip ever. Nope. Unlike we will us. Link in this video to that clip. I think we clipped it at the time.
Yeah. And we like so, always go back to play her exchange.
Because
exchange
we
Emma.
Believe in sources. And so we will link back to that clip for the news. Go ahead.
Admitting, outright admitting, this is what they do. To all of you, to all the audience watching live, this was a performance so that I can later clip this, share it with my audience, and falsely accuse you of something that you never said. And his followers, they fall for it because they don't read the news. Well, you know what? How about I just play this video for you, which I'm actually going to be
telling you right now that my making Tim look like an absolute cretin and fool is not the news. That's not the news. That's not important news. I mean, it may be important for Tim's audience to see. And I'm making this video right now with the explicit purpose of Tim's audience seeing it and realizing bit by bit, because I think the reason why he was so nervous about that Crowder Rumble raid, it's because he's got to make up for all the audience he lost after he had me on his show. And this is for bit by bit to tear down Tim's audience, not because I care about rival YouTubers. There are much bigger YouTubers who are in our space who compete for our audience. No, I want to make Tim lose his audience because it's better for America and society, maybe for the world.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too expensive, but certainly for American society, because he is making them dumber every day. And that's not news. That's just like, this is just gossip. And that's not news.
No, it's media criticism, if you want to call it.
Yeah, anything. I guess it is media criticism, but it's not news. So, Tim, I know you've watched
Critical of
this entire video because it's going to drive you crazy. I want you to know that I just took a clip of yours, took it out of context. Matt pulled it. I don't watch your videos.
No.
No.
He does mention you a little bit later if we want to skip ahead to that. He plays a Bernie video where it's embarrassingly edited, but pretty stupid. But here he comes back around to be mad at you again.
With, I think it's Ethan Klein, talking points that don't know what they're talking about. And that's why they don't want to come on these shows because they look real dumb. Now, there are some shows they do go on, of course. They tend to go on each other's shows where they know they'll be in a safe space. There's a famous moment where Crowder was going to have a discussion with, I think it was Ethan Klein, and then he calls in, and they just switch the camera to, was it Sam Cedar? And Crowder's like, okay, I get it. Thanks, have a nice day. And they use that because they're basically WWE. They're not really interested
right,
in the problems of this country
okay.
are. They're just
Did you realize
listers.
How stupid Tim is? He's making the argument that people like me will not go on right-wing shows to debate them. Not only have I been on Tim's show, not only have I done the Jubilee, not only I will go on. It was Crowder who ran away from the debate. I had never, ever spoken to Ethan Klein prior to him inviting me on there to debate Crowder, and it was Crowder who ran away. He's literally using an example of a right winger running away to explain the dynamic of people like me not wanting to confront right wingers. He's so dumb. He doesn't even realize it until like he's halfway through. And then I think he sort of like starts to go like, oh, they did it so that they could, because they knew
that Crowder would run away. Why? Like, what? Like, Crowder could have easily said, oh, I'm prepared to debate this topic.
It's go time.
And it doesn't matter if it's Ethan or Sam or Bill or Todd or whoever it is. That beanie, I think you cannot wear that beanie in this type of weather.
You need a more elastic one, I think.
Yep. Amazing. Amazing. Let's go. What else we got here?
Let's see. You want to do Dave Rubin?
I guess we might as well blow this stuff out. Let's take one more phone call, shall we? Calling from an 845 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Ben from Queens.
Ben from Queens, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing? I've really enjoyed you having David Dayan on the past few times. I read the book, his book Monopolized. It was excellent.
Excellent.
And on a similar topic, I actually work, well, I'm not going to say that, but yeah. I'm critical of the private equity industry, and I'm curious if you have any indications or you think it likely that, you know, with Medicaid funding being reduced and this being a risk to rural hospitals, I'm curious if private equity will do their typical thing where they swoop in, seize distressed assets, then either, you know, keep the business running at like a cutthroat rate, or they just liquidate the real estate.
I mean, I think it's probably the latter. I'll tell you something. Yeah. I cannot overstate to you how destructive I think private equity has been to our society in a way that we do not understand. They have gone in terms of hospitals, dentists, vets,
nursing homes,
and just extracted value out of these industries that are supposed to keep people healthy. And it has been horrible on the people who work there. But I have no doubt. I think it would be very, very difficult for them to salvage a hospital. More likely they would sell it off. But I think it's, you know, it depends on, I don't know what the value would be necessarily in that area, because a hospital is such an important economic driver in that area. Now, maybe they turn them all into some type of, like, you know, one-stop, you know, urgent care type of place. I have no idea. I wouldn't put it, if there's a way to figure it out, they will figure out how to extract value out of it, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call.
Thanks.
All right, one more final call, and then we'll do that, Dave Rubin. Got to earn it. Calling from a 503 area code. You are the final caller of the day.
Is that me?
Yes, it is you.
Okay. Hey, this is Alessandra in Portland. I'm the one that's been spamming the show a bit with the You Will Kill Me protest demonstration.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. So I called back, it was probably a few weeks ago now. We talked for a little bit. I told you how I have cancer in Oregon, in Portland here, and I'm on the Oregon Health Plan. And I've just been trying to find ways to kind of spread the word about this bill that's going on. And so I ended up organizing this demonstration that's going to happen on Friday on the 4th here in Portland. And I'm trying to kind of just get the word out there for folks to show up locally if they're able to, for anyone that's not local or is but can't show up in person. There's the website is youwillkill.me. Talks about ways that you can kind of...
Is it Y-O-U or U? Y-O-U?
Yeah.
You will... killme.org?
It's It's actually .me. It's youwillkill.me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And the protest is this Friday, the 4th. Where,
exactly.
Whereabouts?
Yeah. So Pioneer Courthouse Square, if you're familiar with Portland, it's downtown. It's not like at a courthouse. It's just kind of like a public gathering space. The demonstration itself is a die-in style demonstration. Not everyone seems to be familiar with that. So it is sometimes also called a lie-in. And the idea is that everyone lies down to represent potential lives lost. So like this was really popular, or not popular, but it was practiced a lot for like the HIV/AIDS crisis.
Yep.
So similar idea here, trying to represent the, I mean, the estimates change so often that it's like, it's hard for me to quote numbers anymore about yeah. like how many yeah. lives will be lost. Yeah. But the most conservative one I've heard was like 16,000 annually.
Yep. Well, two things. One, yeah. Three things. One, we will post yeah. in the podcast and YouTube description of today's show.
Thank you.
Leftist dentist is suggesting post the protest info at Reddit PDX protests. Yeah. And I
yeah,
would also
I did. Thank you.
Okay, and I assume you also posted it in the Discord as well.
Oh yeah, the Discorders know me and this cause well, and shout out to them because a lot of them really were the ones that supported me and pushed me into taking some kind of action rather than sitting around and being scared of losing my coverage.
Well, great. My heart goes out to you in this situation. I can't imagine and watching this happen in slow motion like this.
I kind of like one thing that I want to express, because a lot of the when I talk about this with people, I get kind of either the like, well, you're in Oregon and we have, you know, our senators are great and we have safety nets and we have this and we have that, you know, or on the other hand, we have people say, oh, you won't actually be cut. You know, it's just, you know, this and that. And like those things might be true, you know, I don't have a lot of optimism for any right. of that. And I think that it's really important that we stop, I mean, in all directions, that we stop pretending like we're playing by the same rules yep. as before. And especially here in Portland, getting complacent because we have a lot of privilege here. I have a huge amount of privilege to be enrolled on the Oregon Health Plan, and I have safety nets enough, you know, that I'll probably be okay. There's a whole hell of a lot of people that won't.
Yeah.
And I you know, 1 in 5 Oregonians is on the Oregon Health Plan. And I went out and talked to a lot of people the other day, and a ton of people said that they are on OHP and didn't know about this bill.
Well, I appreciate the call, and I appreciate the work you're doing. And thank you, and good luck on Friday.
Thank you. Last thing is that it also targets gender-affirming care really hard. And I don't care if they removed it from the language at one moment. I don't believe that they won't sneak it back in. So that's all.
Yeah, we'll see. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Left is best.
Folks, that ends the call-in portion of our program. You know what? We'll save the Dave Rubin for tomorrow.
Cool.
We did our one dumb right winger of the day.
Yeah, it's almost too much stupidity.
It's almost too much. Why water it down? We don't want to water down the news. There's too much news out there. Dave Rubin said something dumb. Tim Pool said something dumb. It's just like the news.
New over the wire. Dave Rubin opened his mouth.
It'll be even better, I think, tomorrow when there's a wider understanding of the size of Mamdani's win in this election. Because Dave Rubin is freaked out. He's freaked out.
Folks, that's our program today. Matt, Brian, Emma, in absentia, great job today. Folks, we'll see you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somewhere I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Know how far the detour takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Shifted in.